Oh, you got a swing. Look at that.
Well, it's a grapevine, but yeah, you can have a turn. Just be careful to get on it.
My pants is stuck onto it.
Yeah, I guess you live here now. Questions. My dad had an insatiable appetite for knowledge. My dude. He has got a friend, and his friend's name is Bill. My like Bill. We're gonna visit and talk to Bill's friends. It's gonna be such fun for baby Taro and you. Once there was a guy named Baby Taro. There still is. And he's got a friend. His friend's name is Bill. You already know this part. We got a podcast called the Baby Taro Happy Apocalypse Podcast. That's a long name, but you don't mind. No, that's okay. That's okay. My hear a horn honking. My thing is Bill. We're going to Moncton, Vermont. We're going to go to an outside school. We're driving right now. It looks pretty. It's kind of winter time, but there's no snow right now. But still, the trees look very pretty. I liked it.
Well, Vermont's a very pretty place, and this is a nice, pretty road we're on. So we're going to meet, we're going to talk for a long time with two of the people that started this school. One is named Megan, and the other is named Matt. And there are some other teachers there too, but so we'll talk to some teachers, and we'll talk to some of the kids, and they'll talk to us, and maybe they'll let us play some games with them and have some fun.
My love playing games. My love talking to kids. That's gonna be fun. I can't wait.
It is outdoors, and so you have to deal with the cold, and sometimes it rains, and sometimes the fire is smoky, so you want to be warm, but the smoke gets in your eyes. But I guess that's kind of life, baby Carl, so this is really a school about life.
Sometimes when the smoke gets in baby Taro's eyes, baby Taro cry. But not sad tears, just tears, they tum.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. It hurts, so you want to cry. But, you know, you're growing up, and sometimes things have to hurt a little bit to get the good out of them. So
sometimes the pain a little bit makes you realize, my living, my alive, my experiencing life in all of its bounty.
Okay, now you're getting weird. So here we are, we're gonna drive into the parking lot, and I see some geese flying here.
I hear an airplane overhead. Am I ready for action, Bill?
We gotta get our stuff out, we gotta walk, you know, it's a long way. The classrooms are way down that hill.
Why not energetic baby legs?
Well, you must be, so get your legs out and your shoes on. And,
I don't need my hat. It's kind of cold, Bill.
Well, you should probably wear your mittens, too. Well, along here on your little, whatever you call them, fistages.
My fistages.
Hello. Greetings. Welcome.
My baby Taro.
This is new routes. We're about halfway through or so our morning circle. So it's perfect timing that you guys got here. Hi, Bill. Nice to see you.
Hi, Megan.
What are you guys doing out in the woods?
What are we doing here,
Bill? I forgot that you guys were coming today.
We are. In fact, we're here right now. Are you having some applesauce?
Mm-hmm.
Is it yummy?
Yes, it's strawberry applesauce.
Oh, look at these forts over here. These are fun.
Yeah.
There's forts everywhere.
It, it, so fell down, but yeah, it used to be a nice swing set.
Did you guys make it?
Well, I did a little. I helped a little bit.
What do you like about going to school here?
I like doing a lot of making bow and arrows and throwing darts and stuff.
And you?
I like hanging out and playing.
Is it kind of weird to go outside for school? Is that kind of weird?
No.
No.
Baby Carl.
Carl. Okay, come on.
I just turned 10.
That's so old.
How old are you?
Mine is a little die.
How old are you?
I don't know. Mine is a little die. No one told me.
Come on.
We are talking to my new friend Megan. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Megan Rigali.
This is some kind of school, but not a school?
Well, we're not officially a school. We're a nonprofit organization. It's called the Willow Well Foundation. Started over 20 years ago by Matchline and with the Walden Project, the high school program. And we've been going strong for quite a while and just continuing to grow. But in particular, when the pandemic hit, I was teaching in a public school, public high school in the area, teaching art. And I finished my year, and that summer we thought, oh, everything's going to go away now. The pandemic will be gone. We made it through. Woohoo! And it became pretty clear as we were approaching the school year that that wasn't necessarily the case. So everybody had to scramble and do a little dance in their seat and figure out what to do next. And we had some parents reach out to the nonprofit and say, hey, are you offering anything? We need some help. You know, because kids were staying home during online learning and split into groups, and families needed childcare and needed to work. So we put together a team of educators and jumped in and built the ship while we sailed it. We had about 80 plus kids on the land.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah. Like,
I bet it was loud.
Yeah, it was great. It was really fun. You would have loved it, baby Carl.
Cause they could love the baby. They could tickle the baby.
Nonstop. Yeah.
Might like it. So why did kids come learn here? Why didn't they just go to school like regular kids in a building where it's not cold and it doesn't rain and it's easier? This is not easy school.
Mm-mm. It's a great question.
Am I sometimes insightful?
I think kids come here for a variety of reasons. A lot of kids need to move their bodies. That's just developmentally where they're at. They need to express their ideas, their feelings, their experience of life. They need to experience it through their body. So they this is a place where they can really connect to themselves and embody their experience. They can creatively out on the land, like connecting to the natural world.
I saw some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you see?
We went and ran around. Azalea and Bebe and Zoe took me through the woods and showed me the forts that they had and some bridges and some babbling brooks.
And they introduced you to one of our old grapevines.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, we make friends with trees, with grapevines. They're expert fort builders, for sure.
Oh, look at that!
I just tripped on them. Come on, careful, you might stub your toe.
My little baby toe. Whoa, that got you in the face. You all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
The tree grabbed you. Say, not so fast, little girl.
Hey, do you want to see a drone?
This is magical.
Come on. Pixies probably live in here.
Pixies?
Maybe.
Whoa, this is fun. Look at this. You okay?
out of time.
See, you do that.
Just roll it on your belly. Now you're walking like a baby. That's my job.
Then walk like a baby. That's not a baby.
Babies walk like this sometimes. Just for fun. Then when I get excited, I do a dance. Yeah, I mean, you could be stuck in a classroom staring at the walls, watching the clock, waiting for 10 o'clock so I can go to the next room and sit in a chair.
Great.
And listen.
But instead,
they're different.
Yeah, they get to experience all the seasons, right? Up close and personal. They get to experience all kinds of weather, the moods of Mother Nature, the cycles of nature, of life and death, and seeing, you know, they see things start out in little eggs and grow, and they meet living beings in all different phases of
their
life.
Like baby Carl.
Yeah. Like, they held a lot of little baby Carls in their hands, like, you know, in the springtime with the salamanders, checking everything out.
Yeah, so that maybe, does that make them different people when they get old, like you? I'm not saying you're old, but are they going to be better friends of the planet, do you think?
I think they're some of the best friends of the planet right now, and I love that question. They're a part of the web of life. They've come home to the web of life when they're here, and they feel comfortable and that this is their community. It's not only a intimate community of human beings, but we include the mountains. We include the animals, the insects, the plants, above ground, below ground, in the sky. You know, there's a connection to the web of life, and they feel like they're a part of it.
It's a family.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a Planet Earth family.
It is.
I like your Planet Earth family.
Okay, it's not real, but it's just that we just like to,
okay. They're the ones who are babies.
No. Baby Carl's a baby.
You would love my brother then.
Is he a baby?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is he good at being a baby?
Yeah.
He spits in my face.
Yeah. Oh,
well, sometimes babies. He smacks my butt and bites it, but yeah, he's actually pretty nice.
That's
he
good.
Likes to play with trucks and stuff. Do you
can
like
I jabber
to play
at you
with trucks?
When Azalea's done, can I jabber at you?
A hula hoop!
After I immediately show you,
it's not
okay?
A hula hoop, but you can play with it if you want. It's just hard to hoop.
Broken, maybe.
You can hula hoop.
Sorry. Are you okay?
Yeah. Come on.
Okay.
Onward.
I'm going to show you something really cool that I think.
Whoa.
And we can learn.
That was very nice. You helped her. That made Baby Carl happy.
We're all right.
It's here. Nice to help. Magden, what made you want to do this? Did you have a big reveal, a big apocalypse moment?
Well, I have to admit, a lot of my own experiences growing up were playing out on the land and with my brother or by myself, like out in the forest, out in the swamp. The first food I ever found growing in the wild was actually something we eat regularly here this time of season. It's a brassica, and I found it growing in the wild, and I grabbed a piece of the plant because I recognized it from my mom's cooking, and I ran home and I was just over the moon. Mom, I got food from the wild. It's a Brussels sprout, you know? What a cool little, you know, revelation for a kid, right?
And it comes from the grocery store,
right? Exactly. So here it is. This thing, the wildness gave me this food.
And it was free.
And I found it myself. And it wasn't in a garden. Well, maybe the whole planet could be a garden. So, I, you know, fast forward, I had some experiences growing up, you know, being able to enjoy orchards and farms nearby and, you know, places that were safe and healthy planet to just go out and play in. And I really appreciated that. And then I did have some hiking excursions with family, you know, to huts and things like that. And then I got into wilderness therapy, guiding. And that's what my, when my moment happened.
Do you remember the moment?
I have to say it was more like a continuous reveal that was happening over the course of a year living outside of Vermont.
Slow
But there are specific
motion.
Moments in there for sure.
This is the story of Madden's happy apocalypse that she told Baby Taro one day. When Madden was a girl, she went into a field, and there she saw a friend from her dinner plate. The friend, it was a brassica, which is a Brussels sprout. And Baby Taro didn't like Brussels sprouts, but my do like this story. Madden went running and said to her mama, she said, Mama, I found a brassica out in nature. Madden was so happy with the natural world that it changed her life's trajectory. You need a thesaurus with Baby Taro singing. Madden decided she had to connect people to nature and connect nature to people that would be her life's work. I like that. So do you still think that Brussels sprout kid is here?
Yeah, she's right here. She's the one who plays, like, in the leaves with the kids when we have free play, for sure. She's always present.
Wouldn't you rather play dodgeball and get hit?
I like dodgeball. I don't have anything against, you know, I think there's great school things happening in schools today, but there's something special that I think building relationships and having a sense of adventure and wonder and exploration and discovery, you know, that process is so rich and dynamic out here, that, you know, I'm letting go of my lesson plans in order to really fully embrace the lessons. And I think that's how we approach everything we do, you know, and there's also an imaginative, playful piece that is really important. And I feel is just as important as, say, the subject I'm covering, you know, doing a knife safety test. I think it's also great to have a sense of humor while I'm talking about knife safety. And I can get a lot of attention and buy-in. They're smart. Their jokes are very smart. And they know how to improvise with me and keep it going.
Anybody ever get caught doing knife safety?
Well, doing knife safety, nobody gets caught, but it is part of the experience sometimes. Not it doesn't happen all the time, but it is part of the experience. It's like, you know, walking and running around the forest, you're going to fall down and you're going to scrape your knee sometimes. You're going to get a blister on your hand. You're going to get you know, whatever it is, you're going to drop your food on the ground and be like, oh man. And everybody
has
these moments.
2 second rule.
Yeah. We call that trail spice.
it's kind of gritty maybe.
Well, it's, you know, you pick the food back up, you figure out what you can salvage, but really it's, you know, there's a lot of very practical, real life understandings and skills that kids weave together seamlessly when they're out here that they build, that you know, it's, why would you talk about it when you could just experience it, right? And it's there's a depth of understanding and intelligences that they're able to cultivate because They're out there. They're meeting the wildflowers when they're blooming. You know, they're learning about what mushrooms and flowers and plants are poisonous, and they can respect that and not be afraid of it. They can understand a lot more complexity to being engaged in the world and with themselves. That is richer than just sitting down and looking at a diagram that's been drawn out or reading about it.
They got the 3D. Do you think numbnimes people? Am I thinking how to say this? Like when you talked about the mushrooms, am I thinking, oh, I don't like that. I don't understand. Am I gonna kill it? Smash it, smash it. But you said respect it. So they respect things that now, because they understand them, they might not like them, but they leave them alone?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a natural kind of confidence and resilience that is innate in these kids who are having these experiences. And it's because they can be afraid, but still have the courage to proceed. They can have an encounter with a living being, whether it's a mushroom or a person they've never met before who might have different life experiences than them. And either way, it's still a living being. And so how do we share space? How do we learn to create space so people can respect each other, can still share and look out for each other and be friends, even though, you know, maybe that is a poisonous mushroom, or maybe that is a delicious mushroom to eat. And that's wonderful too. But are we going to pick all the delicious mushrooms if it's okay? No, we don't have to own everything. We don't have to take everything. We can allow it to stay in its place. We can learn about its environment, its relationship, to how it's connected to the trees. This mushroom's connected to the trees, the soil, the air, that it's like a blossom emerging from an invisible world that's happening under our feet all of the time, you know? And that's
kind of freaking me out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like
there's a whole world under there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that also they become protectors of living beings too. Naturally, like, oh, watch out, don't step on that little fungus. That's a new fungus that we just discovered the other day, right? Like, there's something very special about being able to, as a young person, know you can make a difference and you have an important role to play. You're not being told by adults, like, don't do that because you could hurt yourself. No, you have a role that's very important, and we need you to be a part of this.
They're empowered.
Yeah.
My leg empowerment.
Yeah.
My little experiment. Didn't you tell me one that happened recently here at Willow Well where you had a moment and you said, oh, I just love this.
Oh, this may sound like, yeah, right. But I actually have those pretty much every time I come to work here. That's the kind of experience I'm having. So it's not a rare gem. It is what I'm doing. I have moments where I'm just, I pause and I kind of have that step out of your body and back into your body, a moment like that. And oh, the snow is falling and it looks like time is being paused, and I'm looking over, you know, at Elena Wells, who I've known for 3 years now, and I've watched her go from one developmental stage as a kid into a teenager, and I'm looking at her in the eyes and to witness this human being who I've known for many years. She didn't graduate out of my class, you know, like in terms of the restrictions of like, how can you have a relationship with a student between you and between teacher and student? It's not bound by and limited by a kid going through a grade and then leaving my sphere of care. Like, I have a sphere of care that includes them throughout many years of their lives, and that is such an incredible relationship to get to cultivate with someone, and the experiences and stories, like that depth to me is about what I, something I really care about, which I've learned apprenticing in a sense to my students. I've apprenticed to their innocence. I have, and I'm continuing to. I apprentice to their wonder and their development, but there's an innocence there that I feel like is part of a larger healing process, like healing the lineage, right? And we have a broken lineage of human knowledge, passing knowledge down, that we are, I feel, restoring here in this work. And but there's also kind of a broken lineage of relationship and meaning making and culture and kind of cohesiveness of like where, you know, how let's drawing the energy inward, like, you know, a plant does as the cold season approaches and puts their energy into their roots, like going from a global economy into a local economy. I also believe that restoring the lineage is about drawing in and localizing your sense of culture, your sense of relationships, you know, so that there's a kind of web of immediate relation that is restoring a meaningful life. Like, what does it mean to feel like, hey, you're known by someone? You know this mountain in many seasons. You know this friend when they're having a hard day. And a little kid reaching out to another kid in a caring way like that is, that's profound.
That's pretty special, Megan.
This is the bridge. You can actually walk across it. Come on.
Did they say somebody made it?
Yeah, but someone did.
Of course someone made it.
It wasn't just here.
He could slip in this part.
Hey.
You need to be walking down a hallway out of school right now.
Watch out, the water.
Inside. Look at animals.
Just go over the bridge.
Oh. My dad, big baby legs.
You're taller than.
Let's talk about the dark stuff.
Sure.
We got climate change happening. It's real. How do you deal with it?
Well, one is I have a tremendous amount of grief that that I spend time tending and really sitting with and getting to know. And I don't push it away and I don't pretend like it's not there.
You gotta look at it.
Yeah. So like when that whole thing went down, I was telling you about where I was introducing this year, 2022 fall winter preparedness and wilderness survival. And we go and I go home at the end of the day and I'm marveling at the fact that we were in sunbeams and short sleeve shirts. I go out on the land and I grieve, like. You know,
do you cry?
Yes, I do. I have wept from deep down inside of me because I can't not be affected. I have a very immediate relationship to these changes and what the implications are. So I am weeping. I am doing ceremony to process that grief and be with it. And I think what's happened is I have developed over the years an ever deepening intimate appreciation and respect for this planet and the complexity of being a living being in the natural world and the universe. We're connected to beyond our planet, right? And that used to be knowledge that was passed down and was essential, right, in our culture. And now it's an obscure knowledge. And I'm weaving that back in. And I think that also leads to then my ability to celebrate, too, is like if you, you know, with this intimate kind of tender place in my heart and my being that has developed and that is fed by my grief and my honoring of this loss, it allows me to celebrate the beauty and honor it all the more. And I think my students have told me this, you know, in our end of year circle, like the way I speak about nature is something that is it's different for them than they've ever known. And there's this love that comes out of me that they is palpable to them. And when I see a kid, for example, the school shootings last year in Texas, we got together, we said, okay, we got to address this. Are we going to address this? Yes, we are. Okay, how are we going to approach it? What's age-appropriate discussion? We, you know, split things apart, kids apart in groups, and just kind of checked in at developmentally appropriate ways to kind of reassure them. And because we are a learning community. And one of the things that evolved out of that was a grief ceremony. And I dug a little hole near a cedar tree. And I asked all of the children to go out and quietly, silently, look for an object in the forest that they would offer in honor of the children who had been lost and anyone who had been affected by that. And I said, while you're looking for this object quietly, oh, I just want to ask you to think of them and send them your love. So we gathered together and they all went in their own way and we came together and they all had something to offer. And then some of the kids started creating like a whole garden and transplanting plants and putting stones out and drawing on them. And one kid wrote a poem that they shared later in the day, that was really expressing this kind of like this spirit of like, okay, well, if we're going to look at the loss of this other community, it simultaneously allows us to appreciate the community that we have and who we are here. And that's very special. And without processing that, we never would have gotten to that place. So there's things that I can do differently here that I don't have to ask permission from an institution or a culture that doesn't feel like it's meeting my wholeness as an educator, you know, and a human being. So I want to offer that wholeness. And sometimes that means loving the dark too.
Ooh, what do you mean by that?
Loving the dark emotions, loving things that are sad, maybe, or scary, embracing this happy apocalypse, right? It's like, well, if you're going to have an apocalypse, let's have an apocalypse.
Might as well be happy.
Yeah.
Might as well. Kids that go to inside school go apply for college, like most people. And then kids that go to outside school, they probably go to college too, but is it a little different for them? Is it hard for them to get jobs and people to understand? What were you doing outside?
Yeah, good questions. Well, I'm in a place where I'm looking at exactly what you're saying, because we have some teachers who are at the beginning of their career who are working with us, right? And I'm thinking a lot about, in my midlife stage, I'm thinking, okay, what can I do to help prepare that generation, right? Whether it's the next generation of teachers or whether it's my students. And a lot of my contemplations are about cultivation. It's about a story. It's about an experience. It's about something that ties together a lot of different kinds of knowing, a lot of different ways of approaching problems, so that there are a multiplicity, recognizing the multiplicity inherently, and then approaching life with a sense of multiplicity. So it's a creative engagement. It's a wholesome, kind of holistic engagement. And I would hire in a heartbeat someone who had experiences like that, because when you put them in any context, they're more prepared to approach any kind of problem or learning experience. They're more prepared to improvise. They have more self-confidence that's authentic because they've faced real consequences. If you don't put your layers on and figure out how to stay warm based on what you've been learning, then you're going to get cold. And when you get really cold, then Megan comes in and Megan's got to get you warmed up. So that's a whole process. And the kids never, ever forget that moment. And, I remember when you were warming my feet. I remember how you did. Yeah. And they pass that knowledge on to their friends. So if a young person who's 8 or 9 years old can be knowledgeable enough to pass knowledge on to a friend or to an adult even and help them out, well, then that's the kind of person I want to hire when they're a teenager, you know, and just starting to, you know, take on responsibility. That's the person who I'm going to give responsibility to.
They help baby Taro. We were walking through the woods. They helped me.
Tell me all about it.
They told me to be careful and watch where I was going and look out for rocks. This is where my go to the tape.
Look, be careful because I hit my head on that rock. Like, I fell over and flipped over and hit my head on the rock.
Oh, you got a swing. Look at that.
It's a grapevine. But yeah, you can have a turn. Just be careful to get on it.
My pants is stuck onto it.
Yeah, I guess you live here now.
You monkey!
Next time on the Baby Taro Happy Apocalypse podcast, my enemy Matt. He runs the outside school for big kids. We'll go on another road trip. We're going on a road trip! A road trip! We're going on a road trip, Bill and Baby Taro! We're gonna ask people about their apocalypses! We're going on a road trip! Bill and Baby Taro, we're gonna ask people all kinds of questions! And you're invited! We're going on a road trip! A road trip! We're going on a road trip, Bill and Baby Taro! And you're coming too! Am I gonna do the credits now? Baby Taro's Happy Apocalypse podcast was created and produced by Doyle Dean and Bill Vitek. All song composed and performed by Doyle and Bill. What about Baby Taro? And am I even doing my own credits in my own credit? Support was provided by the New Perennials Project at Middlebury College. Learn more at newperennials.org. You know how to spell perennials? Don't type in perineum. You don't know what might come up. Do you like going for road trips? I do. Thanks for listening to the Baby Taro Happy Apocalypse podcast. See you next time. I mean, not really see you, but you're gonna listen. You did it.